This is roughly an illustration that I came across in one of my textbooks that I bought this semester for school. And the idea of it is trying to explain the difference between accuracy and precision. Now, really, I hadn't thought about it before I saw this illustration before we covered the concept in class, but they're two fairly different concepts, even though they seem really similar. The idea, the class that I had the book for is a mechanics or a materials testing class, and the idea of being able to know the difference between accuracy and precision is, with precision, you're studying how repeatable something is, how close you can get to the same result every time, and accuracy is how easily or how close you are to the intended or true result that you would be trying to achieve. And this is a way of determining how effective a measurement is for whatever you're testing for a material. So precision involves the ability to repeat an action over and over again with almost exactly the same manner, thus producing almost exactly the same result every time. And then accuracy is repeatedly achieving close to the same desirable result. For example, if maybe the Chiefs had decided that for opening day next season they wanted to have a skydiver come and jump into the stadium and land just right in the center of the field on the 50-yard line, and so they were going to have some skydiver tryouts, and two guys apply, and the first skydiver, Scott gets five chances to try to make it right on the 50-yard line, right in the middle of the field, and one time he makes it into one end zone, the other time he makes it into another end zone, you know, maybe 20-yard line, 30-yard line. One time, his best time, he makes it to the 45-yard line, you know, maybe a little bit closer to one side than the other. We'd say he's a fairly accurate skydiver. And then the second skydiver, he comes in and five times, right on the button, he manages to land at home plate in Kauffman Stadium. He's a very precise skydiver. And so that's my illustration to explain the difference between precision and accuracy. So hopefully I'm trying to apply this to something that we can apply in our lives. So, as Christians, should we strive to be accurate Christians or precise Christians? And I think from my illustration, hopefully you can determine that I'm trying to steer us towards accurate Christians. And so I want to cover today what would separate an accurate Christian from a precise Christian. And I think there are three things that the accurate Christian does that the precise Christian doesn't do. And the accurate Christian, first of all, knows what the target is. The accurate understands when he has not hit the target. And then the accurate learns from previous mistakes and makes adjustments. So knowing our target. Our target as Christians is simple. It's in the name, to be Christ-like. That is our target, to be like Christ. So let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2, 21st to the 23rd verses. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. So here we see that that Christ has left us this example, and in verse 22, he committed no sin. So that is our target, to be Christ-like in all aspects, but chiefly in the aspect that he committed no sin. And let's go on to Matthew. Chapter 11, and I'll read verse 29. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest in your souls. So here we find Jesus telling us to learn from him. As he has set forth this example, we're supposed to learn from him. John 13:15 is another verse that's relatively the same. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul tells us there to imitate him just as he imitates Christ. And Christ being our target, and what we should aim for is to live the sinless life that he lived. I was watching a long time ago, well, I don't know, maybe last time the Olympics were on, but, whenever the Olympics are on, that's the only thing to watch on TV. And so there was an Olympic shooter in this event, and he had just done a great job. I guess they get so many times that they get to shoot or whatever, and they were hitting these targets that were really far away. And, I guess the guy that went right before him had just completely missed a shot. All this guy had to do, he knew he had it in the bag. And all this guy had to do was just, shoot, make a mildly decent shot, and it was in the bag. He had the gold medal. And so he gets all excited. He shoots down there, and, of course, they've got a camera shot of the target. And after he shoots, that nothing shows up on the target. He ended up actually shooting the wrong target, because there were multiple targets down the range, and he shot at somebody else's target. So he forgot, lost sight of what his target was. And that was just one thing that I can remember from the Olympics one year that I thought kind of illustrated that. And so let's move on to the next thing that accurate Christians do that non-accurate Christians don't. And that's knowing when the target has or has not been hit. This is just dovetails right in with knowing what the target is, but it also involves a little bit of self-examination. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 13. Examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? We need to be able to, when we realize, that we are off target or, not achieving exactly what we need to be achieving as Christians, we need to know, how far off of the target we are. How not Christ-like are we? And I don't think that's necessarily that you can say I'm this far away. But it comes from study and being able to know what the standard is, what the target is that we're able to know what we need to do. When I was thinking about this, I don't know why I came up with this, but if you've ever done a somersault underwater, you always expect to come out of the water facing one direction, and it is never the direction that you come out of the water facing. And where you are and where you think you're going to go compared to where you actually end up is just, to me, in my mind, almost has no explanation when I'm actually doing it. But I think that without knowing, without knowing where the target is, we kind of experience that same disorientation. Let's go to Matthew chapter 7. And I'll read verses 3 and 4. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own. So this is recognizing the plank in your own eye, you know, recognizing how far off target you are, knowing whether or not you've hit the target. That is part of this being a being an accurate Christian. Galatians 6:4 talks about examining your own work. Let me go there and read it so I don't misquote. Galatians 6:4. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. You know, this is talking about examining the deeds that you're doing, or the, you know, your Christian walk, and knowing whether or not it is a cause for rejoicing. Let's go to Psalms 119, and I'll start in verse 59 there, and then the rest of 59 and 60 will carry us over into my next point. David says in Psalm 59, I thought about my ways. He starts out there that he thought about his ways. And then, so the next point is that self-examination must be followed by corrective measures. The accurate learns from previous mistakes and makes adjustment. And so here in Psalms 119:59, I thought about my ways and turned my feet to your testimonies. I made haste and did not delay to keep your commandments. So here David's, he understands, he's received from God what his testimonies are, what he's supposed to be doing, and then he's looked at and seen where he's at, and he's made haste to turn and to be aligned where he's supposed to be aligned. This goes back to where I was talking in Matthew chapter 7, where you recognize the plank in your own eye, and then you take measures to remove it. You correct the problem, and so you can go on doing what you're supposed to be doing. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 1 there. Therefore, leaving the discussion of the elementary principles of Christ, let us go on to perfection, not laying again the foundation of repentance from dead works, and a faith towards God. So here this is talking about how we're supposed to be growing, not necessarily returning to the things that we've done before that were sinful and you know, having to go through the process of repenting from our old ways again. But it talks about leaving those things behind and being able to make those corrections and turn those corrections into actual growth, and to where they almost become, like Drew was talking last week about it, becoming habits, you know, so we can turn them into something that works well for us. In Jeremiah 7, verse 3, God is, through Jeremiah, is talking to the people of Judah, and it says, amend your ways, trying to bring them back to being in line with what he wants them to do. Dan was talking in class this morning about how just over and over again Saul had he didn't wait for Nathan, and he didn't completely destroy the Amalekites, and he went to seek the medium, and how he had just continually made these mistakes over and over again when he's been made known, you know, he knew from the very first time that he did it that he was incorrect, and he compared that with David, how David, you know, was outside of the fold of God at one time, and Nathan came and pointed it out to him, and immediately David made corrections so that he was back in line with what God would have them to do. I heard somewhere, and I don't know if this is just a cliche or what, but the definition of insanity is repeating the same actions over and over again, but expecting a different outcome each time. And so, you know, if we go through life and we continually do the same things, but we never make any adjustments or learn from it, if we, you know, land on home base five times in a row when we're shooting for 50-yard line next door, it just, you know, we haven't learned anything. It's like it says in Proverbs 26:11 about the dog returning to his own vomit. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. So, you know, the dog sees that this hasn't agreed well with my stomach. I think I'll go try that again. You know, it's just the continually repeating of mistakes that we have to stay away from. We have to, you know, it just falls in line with knowing what our goal is, knowing when we haven't reached our goal, and then, you know, doing something to make sure that the next time we get closer, at least. So that, I guess, kind of ties it all up. One thing that I was, the way the textbook kind of brought it to a close, or the conclusion that the textbook had made, was that when we were testing certain materials, or we were trying to conduct these measurements on materials, we should strive for accuracy and precision. But I think if we go through these steps to where we're striving to be accurate, because we're shooting for the standard, that we will, by default or as an effect of that, slowly become more and more precise in what we do as far as moving this over here. And really, we're not moving this over here, we're bringing this closer into here, if that makes any sense. And so that's accuracy versus precision. I think that we can take these things, and it always seems like when you take these and apply them to something, you can put your own slant on it. I'm sure somebody could say, you know, that we need to be precise instead of accurate, and use their own set of verses. But I think especially if we look at David, like we were in a class this morning, and, you know, his willingness to accept the correction that Nathan was giving him and just immediately apply it. I think, you know, of course today we don't have prophets that would come to us and say, well, you know, God was telling me that, you know, you did this wrong. Of course, I don't think God even had to tell Nathan that David had done this wrong, because he had almost done it in front of the entire nation of Israel. But, you know, we have to receive our correction from other places, as far as, you know, studying the Bible and, you know, from our brothers and sisters and things like that. So I guess I'll leave that with you.